Today's presenters are Sarah Bertram and Charlie Weiss. Sarah has been working with IBM for 22 years and a member of the KICS Level 2 support team since 1996. She enjoys looking at dumps and working in various areas of KICS. Charlie is a software engineer with application and integration middleware technical support, IBM software, and has been a member of the KICS Level 2 support team since 2003, where he specialized in KICS web services. Prior to his current role since 1986, he has installed and supported KICS in a variety of customer environments. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Sarah and Charlie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Charlie.
And I'm Sarah. Wait a second. I'm Charlie.
And I'm Sarah.
That's right.
Okay.
Welcome to this introductory session. We're going to be talking about CICS debugging basics using IPCS. As a reminder to everybody, this is intended to be an introductory session. So if you have some experience with IPCS, specifically with CICS diagnosis, a lot of this information probably isn't going to be new for you. Now, one other warning before we really get into the meat of the material. Some of the displays later in the presentation are very detailed in nature. Some displays of dumps, excerpts from dumps. And as such, what we found is that they don't display very well with this technical conference, with this e-meeting. So I'd like to suggest to everybody, if you haven't already done so, please download the PDF that's also available at the same website where you got the link to this conference and follow along on your own local computer so that you can see the detail that we're actually speaking to. If you'll turn to slide 2, Pete, please. I'll take you through the agenda very briefly. We intend to talk a little bit to IPCS basics, things that are not limited to CICS strictly, but just sort of an orientation about IPCS. And we're going to talk about some of the basic requirements, what's needed, some of the basic IPCS commands to help you get around. And then we're going to talk very briefly about the CICS verb exit. There's more on the verb exit to come later in the presentation. We'll take a little bit of time after that to introduce you to the different types of dumps that you might look at to see CICS diagnostic information. We'll then spend quite a bit of time taking you through some specific CICS verb exit examples, and we'll include some tips and shortcut hints, some things that we found very helpful for the kind of work that we do, and then finish up with a few CICS references. Just moving forward, slide 3 and actually slide 4, into our basic topic. So what do you need when you first get into IPCS? Actually, even before you get into IPCS, we would recommend that when you sign on to TSO, make sure that your logon size parameter is set appropriately. Now, on this slide, we recommend 16 meg or larger. As a practical guide, make this as large as possible. This is basically virtual storage anyway, and so as much as your installation is going to allow you to get away with is a good idea. Next, you'll need to define and initialize your IPCS dump directory. This is a VSAM data set, and the directions for doing this initialization can be found in the ZOS IPCS User's Guide. Lastly, you'll also need access to the CICS verb exit. This verb exit is customized. It's tailored to the specific CICS release that you're running. If you have multiple releases available in your shop, then you should have multiple verb exits available to you. Further details about the CICS verb exit can be found in the CICS Operations and Utilities Guide. Now, on page 5, we give you just a little sample menu. This is the IPCS primary menu. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the defaults, and then we're also going to show you some examples from browse and also principally in the command area, option 6, which is where we'll do most of the verb exit work. And now to show you more about the default setup, on page 6, Sarah's going to talk to you a little bit about dump collection.
So the first time you're getting into IPCS to look at a dump, you're going to have to select option 0 to take you to this default panel, which is displayed here. I'm highlighting scope with the option of both because typically we want to update both our local and global IPCS options. And so that's when, if you get out of IPCS and come back in, it will remember this information that you're entering below. The next thing I want to point out is the source line, and this is where you're going to actually enter the dump data set name. I'm going to make a note that the very first time you ever come into IPCS, it will say NODS name there for no DS name. And so I'm showing you here how it needs to be entered, the DS name, open paren, single quote, and then your data set name. The next thing I want to point out is the display content. And I've kind of put in bold there the no machine because that's the default that it will be coming up with. And we like to take the no off of that and leave it just as machine. And if we go to slide 7, I'm going to hopefully, you know, see why this is important. When we're looking at dumps, many, many times we need to know the key associated with a piece of storage that, let's say, may be involved with a program check. So here at the top, if you specify machine, which is what we recommend, I'm showing you example output. Now, in the command line is what one of these commands that Charlie mentioned earlier that we're going to be talking about. I'm showing you IP, and IP is simply a shortcut to enter an IPCS command on the command line. L is for the list command, and I'm basically listing storage address 7,000 for a length of 20 bytes. Now, the output below that, again, just shows you that what the address is that you're listing, the address space, puts the length of, in hex. But underlined there, you'll notice it gives you the key of the storage. In this case, it's key 8, and it happens to be fetch protected. Now, if you leave the default of no machine in your defaults and do that same command, you will notice at the bottom that there is no key displayed, so you will not be able to get that information by doing the list command. So that is why we recommend and always try to set machine instead of no machine on the display.
On page 8 is a summary of the common IPCS commands, and we're actually going to spend some time during this presentation talking about all of these commands. This is actually the first of two different pages that I suggest that you might even want to pull out of the presentation and keep available desk side as a handy reference page. So during this presentation, we're going to talk about the control block format, CB format, equates, find. We've already seen the list command used here, RETP for retrieve previous commands, select status, and then, you know, once again, we'll be spending most of our time talking about various subparameters with verb exit. On page 9, one of the basic IPCS commands, the status system or ST command. Now, the ST command gives us some basic information about the type of dump that we're looking at. It helps us to identify what dump that we have in IPCS for analysis. So in the first example, in a slip dump, you'll be able to identify this as a slip dump very simply by looking at the program producing the dump, which identifies itself as a slip dump. In a console dump, it's a little bit more complicated, but not terribly so. To identify it, the producing dump, the program producing the dump is SVC dump in the case of a console dump. But that's also true in a CICS initiated S dump. And so the way you further identify this as a dump that was taken as a result of a console request is that the program requesting the dump in this case is IEAV TSDT. Now some other helpful information to see here is you can identify from the incident token that the MVS image is MV23 and that's a member of Sysplex 1. Now on slide 10 to finish up this conversation, in the CICS-initiated S-dump example, once again, you see the program producing the dump was SVC dump, but in this case, it was a CICS program that actually requested the dump, in this case, DFH-KETCB. And once again, if you are just joining us, let me also remind you that with some of the detailed displays coming up, you're not really going to be able to make out the detail on the slides if you're just looking at the presentation through the e-meeting. So I'd like to encourage you to go back to the presentation announcement. There's a link to the PDF file, and I'd like to encourage you to download that and follow us along on your local computer. Okay, now if you'll turn to slide 11, and Sarah is going to take us through the AFIDs topic.
So in any dump that you're viewing, it's always helpful to know what address spaces are included in the dump. And let's face it, in today's environment, we're getting much more complex where many times we need to dump multiple address spaces. So here we're going to talk about a control block that happens to be an MBS control block called the Recovery Termination Control Table. And we use this control block to help us identify what address spaces are included in the dump we're viewing. So the command is CBS and then RTCT, which is short for the Recovery Termination Control Table. And then you want to scroll back down past the hex output of the control block to the SDAS column. And in that column, you'll identify the address spaces contained. So in this example we have here, we have two address spaces, one being 396 and the other one being Fox. So now moving on to slide 12, now that we know the address space, it might be very useful to know what job name it corresponds to. And we use the select command to help us identify that. The select command has various options. In this page, we're going to talk about using the all option on the select command. It basically gives you a cross-reference of the ASIDs listing everyone with the all option and lists their job name. It's important to note that this is just listing the names, but it doesn't mean it includes it, right? Back on the prior page is where you know what address spaces were actually dumped. So when you use the all option, you have to kind of scroll down to find the address spaces you're interested in. In our case, it was address space Fox, which happened to be OMBS, and address space 396, which we would have to scroll down quite a ways to find, and that was appears to be a CICS address space. Another option on the select is current. And when you use the current, that simply tells you the job which was executing at the point in time the dump was initiated. So in this example, it happened to be CICS who requested the dump. If it was the case of like a console dump and you did select current, the command will display the master address space, or ASID1, as the job name.
Now, one of my preferences, actually, with the select command is to specify the ASIDs, the address spaces, that you want to look at. Once you've done the control block format, specifying RTCT to display the address space numbers, you can indicate select ASID, and then in hex, you say the address spaces that you're interested in looking at. And then you get an abbreviated list that only shows you those particular address spaces. And that's a little bit more typing, but a very concise way to determine what you have in your dump.
So now moving on to slide 14. Another useful thing that we find is a lot of times we need to understand a store clock value, meaning a lot of our control blocks that we look at have a time of day stored via the store clock instruction, and it's very useful to convert that to a usable date and time. So again, we use the MBS control block format command, and we're going to specify the structure as a TOD clock. So in this example at the top, I've kind of laid out a DFH-L2 block, and I know that at offset 24, into that control block is a store clock. Okay. So what I would do is I would get the address of that store clock instruction, or I mean store clock value, which is 12 Fox Baker Dog 130. And as long as I have that address, the command I would enter is IPCS CBF. I would then put that address, and then STR for structure and TOD clock. And as you can see, that will tell me the corresponding date and time in GMT. In this case, it was September 6th at 12:46:04. Now, there's another way you could do this using another IPCS command, in this case, equate. So now, if I know the address, in this case, 12 Fox Baker Dog 130, I could go into browse mode, list that address. And that's what's in my display right here. And then on the command line, I can issue an equate to equate that address to a name or a symbol. In this case, I'm equating it to block time. Now, once I've done that equate, I can issue the same control block format structure, but this time I don't have to remember that, you know, hex address. I can just do control block format, block time, which structure TOD clock, and again, it lists me the same results. Another note that's not documented here, but there is also another command called list TOD or LTOD for short. And when you supply the I could have cut and pasted the actual GMT hex along with that command, and that would also give me the same date and time. And if you want more information about the LTOD command, you can look in the IPCS command manual for that.
Moving forward to page 15, the retrieve previous, or RETP command, this is actually something that the availability is not limited to IPCS. This is actually more ISPF-based. But it comes in very handy when looking at IPCS dumps, in large part because you may find yourself, as we often do, repeating a lot of the commands that you issued earlier on, or perhaps a variation of a command. So from any IPCS or ISPF screen, you can type in RETP, and that's going to display for you up to the last 25 commands that you've entered. As you can see from the sample below, this retrieve previous is showing us a control block format, an equate, any of the line commands, even the equal one, to go to browse mode within IPCS. And once again, where this comes in very handy is where you repeat a lot of the commands. For example, the verb exits and a lot of the formats are very similar with perhaps slight variations. RETP is a handy shortcut to get to those commands that you've already taken the time to enter. On page 16 is the second really reference page that we've provided as a part of this presentation. It illustrates the different functional areas, the different domains within CICS, and really the different verb exits that are available for accessing your CICS-related dumps. Now, we've highlighted a few of these domains, a few of these options, for a couple reasons, really. One is that these tend to be the areas that we look at most in dumps, just generally speaking. But also, more specifically, these areas are parts of the verb exit that we're going to be looking at in this presentation. The application domain, dispatcher domain, kernel and loader. Now, we're not really going to spend any time talking about parameter manager domain, but we find that this can be very handy for looking at the system initialization parameters that a region is running with at the time that you took a dump. That's not illustrated here, but highlighted because it can be a very important reference. Program manager domain, storage manager traits, and finally, the transaction manager. Now, the other thing to note about this page is we've included from the current releases where a particular value or sub-option became available within the CICS releases. So if you're currently running CICSTS 2.1, for example, you're not going to find the pipeline domain is available yet. You have to upgrade to version 3.1 before you'd have access to that facility. Now, another thing, in the keyword example, we have the equal sign and then a different number, and you have different choices. Zero suppresses that verb exit option. One will give you a summary-only display. Option two will only show you the control block without any really any interpretation. And then option three, which actually we use quite a bit, shows us both a summary at the beginning of the dump and then the detailed control blocks further down into that formatted listing. Now, if you will move forward now to page 19, we're actually skipping past the notes page on 17. That's really more for your reference, and I've talked to those issues. But now Sarah's going to talk to us a little bit about the different types of dumps.
So first we're going to talk about a slip dump. And basically, a slip dump is taken when you've issued a MBS command, a slip command, to capture like a real specific condition. A lot of times we use slips when we need to get multiple address spaces like KICS and OMBS and TCP/IP. So it's been a very useful command. So if when you're looking at a dump, if you want another way to tell if it's a slip dump besides the stsys command that Charlie talked about earlier, is doing a list title command. When you do list title, if it is a slip dump, it identifies it right there as slip dump, and it gives you the ID number. And the ID is going to go back to the trap ID that was specified on this particular slip command that triggered this dump. Then you might also want to verify, or you might have forgotten, what was the actual slip command that corresponds to the dump. And again, you can use the list command, in this case, list slip trap, and it's going to give you the entire slip command associated with this dump. So in this example, the slip dump that we're reviewing was triggered on a CICS message that was sent to the console, DFH EJ0102, and then it dumped, which is the job list option, it dumped address spaces CICS TST1 and OMBS and data spaces associated with both those address spaces. So moving on to slide 20, another useful command dealing with slip dumps is you might want to know the registers at the time the slip was triggered. You know, maybe you need to see a particular register. And you can get those registers from using a status command, or ST for short, and using the regs option. So in a slip dump, when you use ST regs, it's going to give you the PSW at the time the slip was triggered. And down below, it's going to give you the general purpose registers that, as I said, depending on what your slip's about, may be very useful for you. Charlie now is going to go talk on slide 21 about console dumps.
With a console dump, first of all, normally you would take a console dump by specifying on the console dump space com equals and then the title of your dump. There's a reply where you indicate other parameters that you want to include on that dump. But the first time you look at the dump, when IPCS is actually formatting and sort of getting its bearings on the dump, IPCS will display some information for you, including the time and date stamp that the dump was taken, the data set name that it's formatting, and then it will also provide the title for you, and that title actually comes from the dump request. You can also later look at the title of the dump that you're working with by requesting list title or L title, and there's actually an example of that coming up in a couple pages. Now, Sarah talked about the ST regs with a slip dump. It's important to note here that an ST regs issued against a dump that was taken by console request is going to show you the registers for the master console, for ASID 1. And therefore, they're really not meaningful when you're looking at a CICS dump that was taken from a console request. On page 23,22. Sorry about that, Elijah. On page 22, a couple words about the S-data option. If you request a CICS dump using the performed SNAP, then CICS is already aware of what S-data option it needs for the MVS control blocks that are important to it. And so you don't really need to worry about S-data. But when you request a console dump, you need to make sure that you're using the recommended S-data set, S-data option in that request. Now, you can do that either through MVS configuration or at the time of the S-dump. You can specify S-data as a request option to make sure that your CICS dump is going to capture those areas that are important. And where this is important, for example, is that if in your CICS dump, if you have references to address spaces outside of the main CICS address space, for example, LPA, if you don't specify the LPA option in S-data, then you'll have the address referring to that storage, but you won't have that storage in your dump, and therefore you won't really know what's at that location.
Now moving on to page 23, we're going to talk about a CICS-initiated dump. If you do a list title command on a KIDS dump, again, the title's going to tell you that it's a CICS dump. It'll tell you the system, and then it's going to tell you the code, which usually is either a message or advent code that is what the dump was taken for. Another thing in a CICS dump is whenever you issue the KIX verb exit command in a CICS dump, you get a really nice dump summary towards the top of the output. So in this example, I just happen to be displaying KE equal 3, but you would get the same dump summary no matter what domain you looked at. And again, the dump summary just gives you nice information. It gives you the entire SR0001 message here. And it's just useful kind of high-level information. Now, note, if you were to issue a verb exit for K equal 3 in a console or slip dump, there would be no dump summary information like that. Now, basically moving on to page 25, we're now going to kind of put our main focus is looking at a CICS dump and looking at the various domains with our verb exit. And I just want to make a level set that the slides from here on will be based on a sample dump that we took, produced from an SR0001, reporting an ABEND or Program Check OC7 in a user module.
Okay, so on page 26, the first verb exit that we're specifically going to illustrate for you is the KE, and it's one of the first ones that we often look at when taking a stab at problem analysis. First, to gain a bearing on where the abending program or where the problem program was, you can issue the command find or F space and then asterisk running. And you're going to see that asterisk running down in the kernel summary that will show you what tasks were running at the time of the abend. Now, these tasks may or may not have an indication in the far right column showing that there was an error detected. But if not, it's at least a handy way of seeing what was active in your system at the time of the abend. In this case, in this example, we can see kernel error number or kernel number 44, which was transaction number 64, trans ID, oops. And, in fact, we do have an error indication here. It's important to take a note of the kernel number, the tran number, and the trans ID because that information will come in handy for you later when you're going through the dump. Now, we're not through with the kernel domain, but if you'll go forward to page 27, now we're going to search further into the dump. Since we already found that the error was with kernel number 44 and we made a note of that, you can do a find on that number, on that 0044. You may have some false hits on the way there, but what you're looking for is a summary that's going to show the stack information related to your task at the time that the dump was taken. And as we can see here, the error indication in program DFH-APLI-1 that signaled our advent. Now, what's important to note here, too, is that this APLI-1 program isn't necessarily the program that was running at the time. And, in fact, this specific example, it's not the program that was running. APLI-1 is the CICS module that causes the user application to be given control. And so really what this is an indication that while we were at this point in the stack in CICS processing, that we encountered an error. We're going to have to dig a little bit further to see what the actual program that was under control. There's some notes for you on page 28 that talk to that previous page. We're not going to go into detail about that, but it's some handy information for you. On page 29, still looking at the kernel domain, you can do a find on error table. Now, the error table is really a wraparound table that holds just the most recent errors, up to 50 of them. In this case, in this example, we can see 8 that are listed. It's important to note the time of the error. You can see the kernel error number, and then error code and module is handy as well. We already know that this dump was taken for an OC7, and this is really confirmation that we have an OC7, admin AKEA. The module indicator, the DFHYI640, is actually just an independent language stub. So it's not really an indication of what specific program abandoned. And once again, we'll get into more detail about that in a minute. Now, since it's a wraparound table, if you have more than 50 errors, it'll just show the last 50. It can be handy to review this table quickly just to see the type of activity that was going on in your region at the time of the advent. It's not uncommon for CICS to cascade and to take a couple of different dumps for a particular incident. And you want to make sure that you're at least that you have an understanding of the dump that you're looking at to make sure you're trying to get to the bottom of whatever error really occurred that really concerns you. You're going to want to focus on the most recent program check. So in this example, we're going to look at error number 8. Now you can see more detail about that error number 8 by issuing a find. And the find here is a little bit tricky, and it's just a shortcut for you. You can say find or F space a single quote and then number, N-U-M-B-E-R, a colon, two spaces, and that's kind of the trick to it, and then the number, and it's actually an 8-digit number. So in this case, it would be 7 zeros and an 8. On page 30, at the bottom of that notes page, is an example of how you'd enter that find command. And now on page 31, the results that you get after entering that command. So you've issued the find number, colon, two spaces, 00008, and you're going to get the kernel error data related to that advent. And Sarah's going to talk to this more.
So basically, you know, in order to understand the OC7, we really need to get down to the nuts and bolts, which are the PSW and registers at the time of that program check. And as Charlie said, this is how he has taken us down to this specific information, which is the kernel error data associated, you know, with this error. And so we just kind of highlighted here the first thing that comes out under this kernel error data is the hex control block, the actual hex control block. And we didn't show it all here because it's not too useful or not really too interesting because CICS is nice enough, the formatter, to basically format out the information we care, really are interested in that hex data. So as you can see, it tells you the error code, tells you it's a program check, gives you the actual local and GMT time of that error. And then it comes down and underlined there, it actually tells you an offset into a program. In this case, it's offset 434, and it's giving you the stub, the DFHYI640 stub listed there. It also has a line there that says error happened under the CICS request block, or RB. And that's most common what you're going to see. But sometimes you may run into a case where it says error did not happen under the KICS-RB, and it will then say MBS registers to follow. So just so you know, when it happens under the KICS-RB, which is the most common, the MBS registers and the CICS registers are identical. When it says error did not happen under the KICS-RB, you would want to focus on the KICS registers and the MBS registers would be different in this kernel error data, and you'd want to focus on the MBS registers. So in general, the most common is the registers are the same, and you just look at the KICS registers, but just know that if it says it did not happen, and you're going to have another set of registers that you're going to want to focus on the MBS registers. So now moving on to slide 32, this is a continuation of this output of this kernel error information. And here it's actually giving you the CICS registers and PSW. So you'd want to take note of the PSW address and the instruction length. It also gives you the interrupt code. It gives you the execution key at the time of the program check. And as you may know, normally CICS runs in key 8 unless you have storage protection active. And in this case, since the error occurred while running in key 9, that's an indicator to me that this particular CICS is running with the storage protection option. Below the PSW, it's going to give you the general registers 0 through 15. Okay. Another nice thing the formatter does is it actually formats out data around the PSW as well as each register. So here I'm just showing you the PSW data. And in this case, the error occurred down at an offset 434, but the formatter backed up to offset 0 into this DFHYI stub that he found. And I'll just note over in the eye catcher, if you look down past the stub, which is, I know, hard to see, you'll actually see a program name called Second Pigum, along with a compile date, which, again, can be very useful. You then would want to basically focus and find the failing instruction. Okay, and on your notes pages, we talk a little bit about this, but basically you'd want to go down to the PSW address, and we have an arrow there that the PSW points to 13EZ00704, but the instruction length was 6, so you'd have to back up 6 bytes to actually find the failing instruction. And that we have underlined. It's a FOXABLE instruction, which happens to be an add decimal. And many of you would probably be able to go find your either white card, yellow card,
green card,
whatever card to go look up the opcode. In this case, it's an add decimal. And we're not going to get into all of it, but basically, if you were to break this down, operand 2 was not in packed format, so that's what the OC7 is complaining about. And you would have to go debugging and figure out, well, how did, in this case, register 10 get loaded and you know, do your debugging of your application. Another thing I want to mention in this kernel error data format output, the PSW and the registers, you can have many of these kernel error data, as Charlie mentioned, right up to 50. It's a wraparound table. And the PSW and registers listed in all of those kernel error data are going to be correct, meaning, you know, the error at the registers and PSW at the time of that particular error. But one thing I want to note is, again, we format out the data around each PSW and register. But that data is from the time this most current dump was taken, okay? So if you're looking at a kernel error data that occurred 2 hours ago, okay, you cannot rely on the storage that we format out because the storage is from now, not 2 hours ago. So again, I have that in the notes, and it's just something to keep in mind when you're looking at the kernel error data. The data that we print out is current time. It's not from does not represent the storage from earlier.
So the message there really is that if you want to look at kernel error number 6, you really should look at the dump that was created from kernel error number 6, because then that's current at that time of event. Now, also on slide 32, Sarah mentioned the eye catcher, which shows this program's second PIGM, but that's not really proof positive that that was the program name that CICS knew this module as in terms of the advent. So if you'll skip the notes page and go to page 34 now, this is our first venture into another verb exit domain outside of the kernel, and this is the loader domain. Once again, we did a verb exit, verb X, DFHPD640 for RCICSTS release 3.1. LD equals 3 is going to show us, once again, both summary and detailed information in this format. The loader domain format is going to show us two different summary lists. The first one is going to be an alphabetical list of the names of the programs that are actually a part of this CICS region. But it's the second summary that I'm more interested in, because I want to see how CICS knows the program at that particular place in storage. Now, this program storage map is listed in address sequence. And typically the way I would find my way into the particular program that caused the advent is by doing a search on the PSW, but not the entire 8-digit PSW. I'll usually start with the first 4 digits, which in this case would be 93EZ0, and find that location in the program storage map, and then start looking around and ruling out which programs based on the range of storage that that program is actually loaded at. Something else that's handy here is that you can see, of course, that the program itself, which I've identified as second PIGM because of the address, I can see that that's loaded in ESDSA storage. But it's also handy here, and if you have a very complicated environment, it might be handy to see what maintenance you have applied. And you can see that from this program storage map by looking at the PTF level for CICS programs. It'll indicate the PTF that you have applied against that module. Now on page 36, a related domain, but certainly separate, the program manager domain. Here we have a display with verb exit DFHPD640, PG equals 3 for program manager. And this is showing us some helpful information about the program itself. Now, I should stop at this point and indicate you for you. If you're scratching your heads and saying, you know, how does this help me diagnose this problem? We have already diagnosed this SOC 7. We know the offset. We know the program. We know really what this error was. But we're using this advent as an example to help sort of orient you to the different areas that are available within the CICS dump. And these are other things that might be helpful for analyzing more complicated, more different types of problems. At any rate, in the PPTE summary, you can see the different information about, in this case, the advending program's second PIGM. We can see that the language definition for that program was COBOL, and that CICS actually deduced that that program language was COBOL, too. You can see in some of the example programs above that the language definition was assembler, and that the deduced language was not deduced, which is typical for an assembler program. Back to our second PIGM example, in the exec key, the user key, indicates that, you know, once again, it's confirmation that we're running in key 9. It's also helpful to see the particular task, which is going to be summarized in the program manager domain. And you can do that by doing a find on your task number. We already made a note earlier that that was task number 64. So if you do a find on 64 or 5 digits, 00064, again, there may be some false finds in there, but you'll eventually get down to a PTA summary for that task number, 64. And that is actually going to show you the, from a CICS perspective, how you got access to that program. In this case, and this is actually a bottom-up list, We can see that CITS was in control and first pass control at the first link level to first PIGM. That's on the second line of the summary display, first PIGM level 1, that's the first level link, and off to the far right, you can see that the invoking program was CICS. The line above that, at link level 2, we can see that first PIGM, the indication on the far right on that line 1, caused a link to second PIGM, which is at link level 2. Now, if you do a transfer control, for example, that keeps you at the same level, so if second PIGM had done a transfer control to third PIGM, then you'd still see third PIGM in there, second PIGM would be gone, and third PIGM would actually be at level 2.
Now moving on to slide 38, we're going to talk about a pretty useful domain called the application domain. So the application domain basically displays various control blocks specifically associated with each task, and it also displays all the task storage, you know, all the storage that's been getmained by the task. So the AP output can be very lengthy, you know, depending on how many tasks you have in the system. And if you have any questions about the specific control blocks down here, you can, of course, find those in our CICS data area. So at the top of the AP domain, you'll find, again, a summary information. Of course, we're doing the AP equal 3. And the summary is going to list every transaction if it's in the system. And going across there, you can see it gives you various addresses of the different control blocks, TCA, transaction work area, the exec interface blocks, and so on. To the far right, you have a column called facility type and facility ID. And so in our particular case, the offending transaction number 64 was a terminal-initiated transaction, and it was initiated from a terminal called TC21. Now, down below in the control block information, we have jumped down and are just showing you the control blocks for our specific task in question. But there would be every task listed in this area. And we're just showing you, you could do a find like before on, like here you could do a find on period 00064 to get down to your specific transaction that you're interested in. And so it lists out the TCA along with the system TCA, and then the system EIB, and then I have excluded out some of the other EIUS along with the EIB and just showed you at the very bottom there a piece of task storage, which is classified as user 31 above the line. And some things I want to point out here that again, can be useful is, in particular, the exec interface block, or in this case, I'm showing the system EIB. If you were to look up that control block and go to offset 1 Baker, you will find that the EIB function code is listed there. And sometimes that can be useful. What's the last exec kicks command that I've issued? And in this case, the code, it's a 2-byte field, is 0208, and it corresponds to an exec CICS ignore condition command. And you can look up that 0208 in the application programming reference. You know, one thing we use this for is the system EIB is what CICS, is kind of CICS copy of the exec interface block. And then, as I said, below is an EIB that will be displayed. And sometimes an error will occur and while processing an exec kicks command, or maybe the task is hung. And so what we do is we look at the system EIB and compare offset 1 Baker and 1 Charlie to the EIB. And if they're different, then that tells me I'm currently processing or in the middle of processing the command in the system EIB. If they're the same, that just means it's the last exec kicks command that this application had issued. Another useful thing in the AP domain is the storage that we print out for each task. When the formatter is printing out the actual storage, it will check the storage accounting zones or the check zones, as I have highlighted on the bottom of the page. In this case, it was a U00, and then the task number is 00064. And those should match, and if they don't, then that would indicate that a storage overlay has occurred and a pending storage violation would occur when the task, when that piece of task storage was free-mained. And so sometimes if you're looking at a dump and you suspect possibly a large overlay, you can go into the AP domain, and if you go to page 39, at the bottom, I've shown that you could do like a find, let's say, on DFHPD, and KIX will let you know if a piece of storage has had a violation. In this example, you know, it put out a DFHPD 0124 indicating a leading check zone was bad, and also the DFHPD 0125 indicating a trailing was invalid. And so that can just be sometimes useful and a clue if you suspect a big overlay. You can go and just see if anybody's current task storage has been affected by the overlay. So it's just a little trick, and so we do use the AP domain quite a bit. Now moving on to page 40, we're going to talk about another kind of general domain, the transaction manager domain. And this is, again, just from the transaction manager, one thing he cares about or keeps track of is the max task value, okay? So everyone has a different maximum user task specified, and we come here to see what that value is. In this case, they have a max setting of 32. It'll also tell you if you're currently at max task, which would be more of a when you're in a hang or slowdown situation. Possibly the system has backed up to where it's at max task. In this case, it's not, but it would be useful if it said yes there. You can get some other information. The forced purge has been issued. If you've ever issued a forced purge, that will have an indicator of yes. It doesn't mean that it happens now. It just means at some point during the run of this CICS that a forced purge has been issued. Then you get down to the actual transaction summary. Again, it's going to list all the transactions, and it's going to give you some control block information as well as the start code column, which I don't have highlighted, but that's kind of interesting. In this case, a T for our transaction oops indicates it's a terminal transaction, and we kind of knew that from the AP domain. And in the transaction manager domain, you can go out to the right columns there, and again, it tells you here the facility type was a terminal. And in this case, it actually gives you the TCTTE address. In the AP domain, it told you the actual four-character term ID, but in this case, you can get the TCTTE address. And another real useful thing we use transaction manager domain for is a lot of times we might want to know how long has a task been in the system? When did it get attached? And where that store clock information is saved in, is in the transaction control block, or the TXN. And so for the OOPS transaction, it's that top address, 122.09.340. And as long as you have that address, and we're going to jump to page 41 now, which is kind of a notes page, but if you look at the third bullet, I'm showing you basically a command that you can issue to get the attach time for the transaction. So as long as you remember that address, you would want to issue IP CBF. With that address, and now you can, another format is you can do plus 50, and it will do the calculation. So I know the store clock is saved at offset 50 into the TXN control block. And again, I'd add structure TOD clock. And I know now that CICS attached this OOPS transaction on September 6th at 12:50. So, again, that's just another little trick that we use with XM that can be useful. Charlie's now going to talk about trace.
What a big topic, trace. A lot you can do with trace. This is really just intended to be an introduction here. We're going to show you an abbreviated display on page 42. This is sample display output from a TR equals 1 command. Now, here the verb exit formatting is a little bit different. That is to say, it's similar to the 0, 1, and 2, the 3 options that you would see with the CSS domains. With trace, we're going to get a summary information with TR equals 1, and these are just limited to one line summary for each trace entry. Now, the important information that we'd see here at the start would be what the status of your internal trace data set is. In this case, we can see it's not only is it started, but we see that the size is set to 4096K or 4 meg in size. Take note, the default for CITS still is a 16K internal trace table size, which is really insufficient for most needs. If you need your trace table for any problem diagnosis, 16K is gone in a flash, and we highly recommend at least 4 meg as a standard setting. Now, one of the reasons it's important to note that internal trace status, first of all, even if you have internal trace stopped, you will get some trace entries. So just because you see some stuff listed in your TR equals 1 display doesn't mean that it's current and representative of your current problem. If you look at the example that we have here, the very last trace entry under the function column indicates exception, the asterisk EXC asterisk. Now, exception trace entries are always written to the internal trace table, regardless of your trace table status. So even if you had internal trace stopped, you'd still at least see all of the exception trace entries related to the CITS region. In addition, if you had your internal trace on, that is to say started earlier and then later stopped, the earlier entries that were written out at a completely, you know, at a much earlier time would still be present. And so they may not be representative of your problem. Now, the column headings that we've shown here are actually our own invention. That is to say, when you do a verb exit display with a TR equals 1, you're not going to get these column headings. We provide them here to help give you some orientation as to what it is that we're looking at. So all the TR equals 1 is intended is to give you a quick overview of the activity in your CICS region. You get to see the different domains indicated by the trace points and really just a quick summary of the type of activity that CICS was engaged in. On the next page, 43, the TR equals 2 display, here we're seeing a lot more detail related to individual trace entries. And as you can see from the previous page, we listed probably 20 or 25 different summary trace entries. With a TR equals 2, in this example, we only have room for two displays, two trace entries. And one of those is very abbreviated. The second trace entry showing the exception program check is very large and shows a lot of detailed information. Now, some of that information we can see from the one of the summary lines near the top of the AP 1942 trace entry. There is a timestamp listed, 13:50:12. Now, that's listed in local time, so that's important to note. You can also see from the date areas listed within that trace entry display, the trace entry data is actually the kernel error data that you've seen earlier in some of our other verb exit displays. But here it's repeated for you in the trace information, and you can see, among other things, the OC7 indication in the eye catcher to the right. Down on the second line at offset 3-8, you can see the PSW information, as well as the instruction length and the ABAND exception code. Now, these different data areas are actually summarized for you in the trace manual, the CACS trace manual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, now skipping to page 45.
This is the last domain we're going to show you today, and definitely is not very useful for a program check. It's called the dispatcher domain, and you know what we're giving you here is a picture from our OC7 dump, so it's a very normal looking picture of dispatcher. Again, dispatcher would be more, you know, most useful if you came in and had a hang, some type of hang situation, or you know, a task you thought it was suspended, had been out there for days. You know, this is where we'd come to try to learn more about a particular task. So here we're just showing you the summary at the top. Gives you all the information about the indicators for what is below. And anyway, I'm just kind of highlighting, if you go down the fourth line in the output, in the F column, which is the state of the task, you'll notice you have an R stands for running. And there's, if you go to the far right, that running task happens to be under a CQ TCB, which is a CICS internal TCB that's always running. So that's not, you know, that should always be in that state, and we would just not be too interested in that one. But if you go down a little bit farther, you'll see that there is another running task, and oh, I should say the type of the task column, that tells you up above that that was a system task running on the CQ TCB, but our task is, who is running, is a non-system task. And if you go to the far right, the last five numbers are the task number, and that can be very useful because that's the only place that tells you what, you know, the actual task number is associated with these lines. You can see that I'm running on the main TCB or quasi-reentrant TCB. Another useful thing you have to keep in mind is when Charlie was talking about trace, our trace output, we give you the local time. And we like to confuse you because in the dispatcher, the times are always GMT. So just keep that in mind, that the times in the dispatcher are always GMT. Then if we go to slide 46, I just kind of wanted to give you a little snippet of what a dump that was taken when tasks were backing up. Okay, so it would be a useful thing to look at. And I've only shown you three columns, the resource type, resource name, and type of suspend kind of columns from this dump. And, you know, one thing you'd want to note is the time the dump was taken, and you could get that from various ways. You could do IPFTSYS, and in this case, the dump was taken at 22:09:05 GMT time. Under the first resource type, I've shown you a TCP norm. And the reason I kind of put that there is that's my CICS's main terminal control program task. And he will always run in any system. And so his time should really reflect the time the dump was taken. If it didn't, then that would be a sign that Kix was really unhealthy. And so here I'm just showing that, sure enough, my TCP task does match the time the dump was taken. But then when you go down and look at the rest of the tasks, you see them all have a common resource name of LMQ. And then when you go look at the time they were suspended, it was an hour and a half ago, okay? And so all those tasks would have been, you know, waiting for a particular lock. And so then you'd want to go and do your own diagnosing to see what lock they were waiting on and so on. But I just wanted to give you a little picture of when the dispatcher domain was useful. And basically all these domains that we've talked about, you know, I hope you see there's a lot of overlap. You know, you might be able to get information, you know, from various domains. And again, it's just a matter of what you get used to, you know, going in. And hopefully we've been able to show you some of that information.
Yeah. How do you get good at looking at dumps? You look at a lot of dumps. And one of the things that we've tried to do here for you is to give you an orientation for what sorts of things you should normally expect to see in a dump so that hopefully you can recognize when things don't look correct, and hopefully we've given you some skills for being able to dig a little bit further when that's the case. The last example that we're going to provide on page 47 is a different type of verb exit. This actually is not the CITS verb exit. It's a MVS-related verb exit called M-trace. When you type verb exit, verb X, M-trace, it's going to display for you the console message display. This is, these are the console messages that were in the buffer at the time that we took the system dump. And this could be handy when you have an incident, some sort of a problem, for example, in CICS that may be caused or influenced by one of your other subsystems, for example, DB2 or MQ series. So you can often see the interrelatedness and other interplay of some of the other subsystems and perhaps extend from that how they might have affected CICS. On page 48, we provide a quick reference to several of the resources that we used in putting together this pitch and things that may be helpful and useful for you in as you go about looking at your own CICS dumps. And on page 49, just to wrap up, a summary of the information that we've looked at. We've tried to introduce you to some of the IPCS basics, not particular to CICS, but really just an idea of what's needed and how to get set up using IPCS. We've talked about different types of dumps, how to identify those dumps, and how to use the dumps. We've taken you through quite a bit of detail in a variety of CITS verb exit examples, and then, of course, the reference page that we just provided for you. And this concludes our presentation.
We'll take a question from John Dobler with IBM.
Hi, Sarah and Charlie. I've got a question about the IPCS defaults that you set up in the beginning, and you said you had set it to machine so that when you listed storage, you would see the key. And in your example, you got key 88. Which digit is the key, and which one represents the fetch protected?
Hi, John. Yeah, the first, and where you can learn more about this is in the principle of operations. They have a whole section on storage key. But it's the first key, John, and that's a good question. The first 8 is telling you that it's key 8. The second 8 is what tells you that it's fetch protected.
Thank you. Also, just a comment. In the defaults, you had print and terminal. And just to say that you probably want to set it up with no print.
Thank you, John. Good point.
And I guess lastly, I would like to just comment about the dispatcher section where you showed a LMQ weight that those resource and resource types can be found to help you diagnose that kind of a problem can be found in the problem determination guide. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Sarah and Charlie, for presenting today.
All right. Thank you, Elijah.